Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This year's San Francisco International Arts Festival is a call to action inspired by a question posed by German playwright and poet Bertolt Brecht in 1939. In dark times, will there also be singing? And his answer was, yes, there will be singing about the dark times. Well, starting this Thursday, artists from the Bay Area and 12 countries will come together for 2 weeks of dance, music, performance art, and theater to echo Brecht's affirmation that, yes, there will be singing about the dark times. There will also be celebrations of diversity, multiculturalism, and cultural expressions in a truly global fashion. In these dark times, what role are artists playing? We have done many shows about this over the past couple of months. And how does art break down the wall of intolerance, xenophobia, racism, and hatred? Festival director Andrew Wood says, in the face of adversity, it is our job to stand up and declare that San Francisco remains an international city that welcomes a full and healthy dialogue with the rest of the world. Andrew Wood is executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. It starts this Thursday, and the performances are at Fort Mason in San Francisco. And Andrew Wood joins us in studio. Hi, Andrew. Thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. We're also joined by Brian Copeland, an award-winning actor, comedian, author, playwright, and radio talk show host. Brian will perform his one-man play, Not a Genuine Black Man, at the festival on Wednesday, May 31st at 8:30, Friday, June 2nd at 7 o'clock, and Sunday, June 4th at 5 o'clock. Not a Genuine Black Man is about Brian's upbringing as one of the only African Americans in San Leandro, a town that did not want his family there. And Brian also joins us in studio. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
It's great to see you in person.
Well, it is a pleasure to be seen in person. Nice to see you, too.
Great to have you here. We're also joined by Nuloufar Talebi, a writer, theater artist, and award-winning translator. She's the editor and translator of Belonging, New Poetry by Iranians Around the World. And Nuloufar will be performing a dramatic reading of the libretto and paratext of a new opera inspired by the life and writings of Nobel Prize-nominated Iranian poet Ahmed Shamlu, followed by a Q&A. And that'll be on Wednesday, May 31st at 8 o'clock. And Nuloufar also joins us in studio. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. Well, it's great to have all of you. Andrew, I want to start off with you because the theme of this year's festival is getting a lot of attention. Again, it's a question posed by Bertolt Brecht back in 1939, in dark times, will there also be singing? Why did you decide to embrace that theme for this year's festival?
Because we wanted to have an activist dimension to the festival. We wanted to have a lot of work that was either socially conscious or political. And we wanted to have activities that ran alongside that to allow arts audiences to try and become activists, community activists, if they wanted to be. So I met with the Center for Political Education, Rachel Herzing, and Isaac. Isaac. We sat down and decided we were going to come up with this workshop, and that was going to be the title of the workshop. And it's on Saturday, June the Isaac Ontiveros. I apologize. It's going to be on Saturday, June the 3rd. It's a four-hour workshop. It's free to the public. And we're working with a lot of different artists like Fernando Marti, Dohi Lee, who are activists. And we're inviting the audience to come in and learn how to be activists, how to join activist groups, and how to, if they're artists, use their art to serve a more activist cause. And I think it's a call to action. I mean, the Trump presidency is a call to action. And with the reason we have the Sanctuary City emblazoned on the front of it as well as all part of that, because we're trying to, you know, join the dots between different parts of what all that means. I mean, Sanctuary City is a legal definition for not handing over undocumented people, but really it's part of a very, very rich history of activism and revolution in the Bay Area. It goes back about 100 years. And for us being at Fort Mason, where all the men were demobbed after the Second World War, a lot of those people ended up joining the Beats. The Beats became the Summer of Love, and their children became Gay Pride, and those are the people that lived through the AIDS crisis. And then we have all these other things happening. We had the Panthers in Oakland. We had the farm workers, all these other activist organizations happening and feeding in off of each other. So when the refugees came in the 1980s, there was already something for them to plug into. And I can't speak to sanctuary cities for other parts of the country, but for San Francisco, that was a huge part. So when they attack our sanctuary city status, they attack more than that. They're attacking us and our identity. And so it was really important to put that out front and center, along with In the Dark Times, will they be singing? They'll be singing about the dark times, and these folks are all doing that.
And just to let listeners know, the logo has photos of a number of different artists and playwrights, and then there's a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge, the beautiful picture, and around the bridge, it says San Francisco Sanctuary City, and at the very top of all of these photos is In the Dark Times, Will There Also Be Singing?
It's on our website as well.
What are the artists, how are the artists responding to this? Niloufar, what are your thoughts about the question that's being embraced by this festival? In the dark times, will there also be singing?
I think it's just so timely and so important. And though we didn't really plan the theme and the subject matter and the source of inspiration of our opera to coincide with this theme at this time during this administration, because I started conceiving the opera in about in 2012, 2013. But I think everything has come together. The main source of the inspiration for the opera is the iconic Iranian poet Ahmad Shamlu, who lived from 1925 to 2000. And I had the fortune of knowing him personally during the 4 years right after the Iranian 1979 revolution. He would visit my parents' home for their literary salons. And so I came of age not only during a time of post-revolution chaos, war with Iraq, martial law, disappearances and executions, but also with a world-class cultural figure and a person whose life was dedicated to the struggle for social justice and human rights, not only within his borders, but also outside of his borders. So I was very lucky to have that source of inspiration for myself. The title of our opera is called Abraham in Flames, which comes from one of his seminal books of poetry in the 1970s that were written for specific people and dedicated to specific people who were executed and persecuted in pursuit of human rights and social justice.
And Abraham in Flames will be performed on Wednesday, May 31st at 8 o'clock.
Yes, we have it's a sneak peek preview event where I'll be talking about the paratext and the poetry and the other sources of inspiration that have gone into making the opera, as well as some singing by two lovely, lovely local singers and a pianist.
Great, and we'll talk more about that a little later in the show. Brian Copeland, what are your thoughts on this question that's being posed? In the dark times, will there also be singing?
Well, it's just interesting how dark the times have become. Not a Genuine Black Man is a revival. I originally did the play back in 2004, and it was supposed to be 6 weeks and went on to run a couple of years, being the longest one-man show in the history of the city, went off Broadway. And then I came home and I put it away, and I've done three other plays since. And I mounted a couple of performances in San Francisco because there were some folks from L.A. who wanted to come up and see it. So we put together a couple, and it was just kind of as a showcase. And I noticed that it was landing differently than it landed with the times I had done it before. It was embraced before, but there's something almost visceral, maybe that's where I'm looking for, in the response I'm getting from people. And I'm going to be doing a lot more performances of it now because America has lost its empathy. That is what the Trump presidency and Trump election has shown us. America has lost its empathy. And in this play is about when it's about several things. It's about racial identity. The impetus being jumping off point was I do a talk show over at KGO, and I got an anonymous letter saying, as an African American, I'm disgusted whenever I hear your voice because you are not a genuine black man. So I started this whole exploration of what does it mean to be black in America. And it goes back to when I was 8 in 1972, we moved to San Leandro at a time that San Leandro was, depending on whose numbers you believe, between 95 and 99.9% white, and considered by Fair Housing Groups one of America's most racist suburbs. So I do about 25 characters throughout the course of the play, and I let you see the world through the eyes of an 8-year-old little boy who is the victim of domestic violence at home, who walks down the street to go to the park and is called the N-word and chased and picked up by police. And I take you by the hand and show you what it's like to be the other, I take you by the hand and show you what it's like to be the one who's different. Because at some point in life, and I think that's one of the reasons why it really resonated with people originally, is that we're all the other at some point. You're going to be in a situation where you're the only black, the only only white, the only Persian, the only gay person, straight person, you're a Catholic, Muslim, whatever. And how do you navigate those waters when you're the one who's different? And I think that what we saw last November was a case of a certain segment of America saying, we don't want to know about people who are different. We don't want people who are different here. You know, this is our place. This is how we want it. If you don't think the way that we do, then we, you know, you need to know your place. I mean, really, that's what the Trump presidency and those who follow Trump are about. You know, you need to know your place. You know, this is there's a certain demographic here. We'll call it what it is. White men who built this country and owned this country, and now we are being infringed upon by them, by those people. And it's a lie, first of all, but it's a lie that right-wing propaganda has been able to indoctrinate these people with. So it's time to dispel the lie, and you know, work such as what I'm doing, and work such as what you're doing with the opera, that this gives an opportunity to artists to dispel the, I'm not even going to call them myths, dispel the lies that are being told by the far right.
Brian Copeland's one-man show, Not a Genuine Black Man, will be showing Wednesday, May 31st at 8:30 p.m., Friday, June 2nd at 7 p.m., and Sunday, June 4th at 5 p.m., and again at the Fort Mason Center in San Francisco. You can find more information about the San Francisco International Arts Festival at yourcallradio.org. Andrew, when you hear Niloufar and Brian talk about the work that they're doing and how it's connected to the overall theme of the festival, what are you hearing from other artists? And how do they choose what to bring to the festival?
Well, it's first of all, it's very inspiring. I mean, I should just shut up and listen to them. That's what I think more than anything else. But there's some artists, especially the international artists, are not changing what they do, because most of this was programmed before the election, and we're not having the internationals change what they do, because it's all touring work. And we know, we've seen it, we think it's great, so we want them to do that. Some festival artists are doing what they were, like Niloufar is case of point. She was going to do this regardless of what our theme was going to be. Some are doing family-oriented work, some are doing different types of work, but there are some people that, you know, changed what they were going to do, Brian, for example, because of the election and because of the change in the world that he saw. Other people like that are Brenda Wong Aoki. She was going to do a different piece, but now she's created a new work called Aunt Lily's Garden, 100 Years of Legalized Racism, which is about her family's history here. Another gentleman, Rotimi Agbabiaka, is doing Typecast, which is about being a gay black actor and the lack of opportunities for that. And there's also people who are just doing just what they do, which is political. I mean, Abadá Capoeira, for example, are in the festival. And Abadá was founded by Marcia Treidler. And she's an immigrant. She's a woman of color. She's a lesbian. But she's founded this institution in the mission, which teaches hundreds and hundreds of children over the last two decades. And, you know, what they're doing, capoeira, it's the dance of slaves, the dance, and that's what it is. Mm. You know, so they're doing what they're doing just by being. They are being activists, you know, just by doing what they do. And for me, that's always one of the most powerful shows that we put on, because, you know, when you to speak to Brian's point, whereas these people, and we're going to show them their place. The good thing is that the demographics of this country are changing, and there's nothing that Donald Trump or his supporters can do about that. And when you look out from the stage to an Abadá Capoeira audience, that future is right there, and it's beautiful. And it's the most inspiring thing you can see. It's all these young faces of people who are just hungry for life, you know? And that's the America I see. It's a multicultural America that's embracing, that's open, and that is led by people like this. So to me, that's important as well. Then there's even other artists like Gamelan Sekajaya who swear to me, and they tell me that this is not political, but I'm going to read you what their play is, or their piece is about. It's a work for shadow theater, dance, and Balinese gamelan that paints a story of a mythic tyrant whose arrogance poisons the rivers of knowledge, arts, and culture, casting the world into chaos. Saraswati, the goddess of art, language, and learning, fights a magnificent battle to restore the balance. So they say, this is not political. And I said, sure, it's not political.
What a coincidence. Yeah. What a coincidence.
Yeah. So there's lots of different artists manifesting this sort of stuff in different ways. Also Voodoo Cabaret, their show, they've written a new show called Rise Above Racism. So they'll be doing two performances of that. And that's just really powerful work.
It's incredible just looking at, I have the schedule in front of me with photos of the various performers, and it's amazing what you've put together. I mean, I love dance, and mm-hmm. there's so much music and performance. I mean, really, hats off to you for putting all of this together.
Well, this is because of our relationship with the Fort Mason Center for Arts mm-hmm. and Culture. They're our co-presenters. And back when we first started at Fort Mason, they used to rent two theaters to us. But starting in 2015, they turned around and gave us half a dozen venues at no cost. So we went out and programmed those half a dozen venues, and this is what we're able to do with it. And it's allowed us to create something which we hadn't realized how close we were to. And that's we've got enough program density now that we actually have a discrete marketplace dimension to the festival. So we're inviting presenters to come from around the country to actually see work, because we want... I mean, it's this international festival, but 75% of the work is local. And so if presenters are coming in to see the work on the stages, they're coming in to see local artists. And this is how we get our political message out, is how do we get our folks out on tour? So that's part of what we're doing as well, is to try and cultivate the work so that people, say, a professional audience from other parts of the country can come and see it, and then say to Brian, we love your show, we're gonna come and take that to wherever we are. Or with Niloufar, her work is still in progress, so we'll be asking presenters to come and be interested in co-commissioning it, things like that, so that they will actually contribute to the life of the work and financially contribute towards getting it onto the stage.
Andrew Wood is executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. It kicks off this Thursday and it runs for 2 weeks. The performances will be at Fort Mason in San Francisco. You'll see artists from the Bay Area and 12 countries coming together for dance, music, performance art, and theater. We're also joined by Brian Copeland, an award-winning actor, comedian, author, and radio talk show host. And Brian's one-man play, Not a Genuine Black Man, will be showing Wednesday, May 31st at 8:30, Friday, June 2nd at 7 o'clock, and Sunday, June 4th at 5 o'clock. We're also joined by Niloufar Taleb, a writer, a theater artist, and award-winning translator, and she'll be performing a dramatic reading of the libretto and paratext of a new opera inspired by the life and writings of Nobel Prize-nominated Iranian poet Ahmad Shamlu, followed by a Q&A. That'll be on Wednesday, May 31st at 8 o'clock. And you can find the schedule at yourcallradio.org. If you'd like to join us, if you'd like to talk about the role that artists are playing in these dark times, that is the theme of the festival, we'd love to hear from you. If you are an artist, or if you're like me and you need to disconnect and you go to art to see something beautiful and just to allow the process to unfold in front of you, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Niloufar, you are an Iranian-American and an immigrant. What was your reaction to the election of Donald Trump? And when you hear Brian talk about his experience in putting his one-man show to rest and then bringing it back because it's needed now more than ever, what goes through your mind?
Rose, it's been very difficult for me to make art the way that I do, because I'm calling from my culture as well as calling from the Western art forms that I know and bringing the two together. So all throughout my artistic career, it's been a space that I occupy in the middle that is neither really understood by the Iranian diaspora, nor is it really understood by the mainstream. Mm-hmm. So I've learned over the years to contextualize the work that I do and do events like this and do more events. I did a wonderful presentation at the Berkeley Lecture Series yesterday, in fact, and that brought together a large group of Iranian Americans who I was able to tell about the art form of the opera and how we brought this story that's inspired by this amazing poet to the operatic art form. In terms of, this opera itself, I mean, just a little anecdote about how I came to self-produce this opera, and it's an act of madness that I don't recommend anybody to do, to personally self-produce an opera. But, you know, I was in opera training programs, residency programs, a few years back. And the first starter opera that I wrote was set in 1983 Tehran. And it was about a story of parents fighting about whether to smuggle their 10-year-old son across this harrowing journey across the border or not. Because at that time, during the Iraq War, Iran-Iraq War, young boys were taken to walk over minefields to open those fields for the soldiers to go through. So this opera is basically, if you really think about it, it's pretty much like the first scene of Superman, where the home planet is this being destroyed, and the Superman's parents are wondering how to get their infant son out. But after I did this opera, the producer offered me to do another opera with them, with one caveat, and the caveat was no operas with Iranians or Iranian characters.
Hmm.
And I thought, I'd have rarely heard anything so racist in my life. I wanted to say, so does writing about American stories impinge on John Adams's operas, or does writing about the South compromise Eudora Welty's work, or does writing about Russia impact Nabokov's work? You know, why am I being told this at all? Would I be told this if I were writing with Italian characters or with fictional characters like Superman? And it was at that moment I realized if I were going to do Abraham in Flames and do the operas, the stories that I wanted to tell as a storyteller, that I would have to do this independently. And I feel like I've always been an independent artist in everything that I do. I've been very fortunate that I've gained a lot of institutional partners in doing this opera. The San Francisco International Arts Festival was the first. And Andrew's been shepherding this project since the very beginning, I think since 2013 or 14 when we first started wanting to collaborate. And then we're also working with the Merrill Opera Program for our soloists, the Young Women's Choral Projects of San Francisco, who the girls' chorus is our main character, because it's an opera that is about young people coming into their truth early on, but then going through the hellfire that is the greater mainstream that wants to, you know, break you down, to really, in the end, become committed to their own truth. Other partners are the San Francisco Conservatory of Music, where we'll be developing the rehearsals of the opera, as well as the San Francisco Opera Education Department, where our opera will serve as the educational opera for them in the next season. So just making this opera has been a political act for me.
And tell us a little bit more about Ahmad Shamlou.
Ahmad Shamlou is such a large cultural figure in Iran, and it's he is gaining more and more readership in the West. One of the reasons why he's not so as well known as his equals, who are, you know, Neruda and Rilke and Eluard and Akhmatova, world-class poets, is because his poetry is very language-based, and it's very much contextualized within the society that he came from. Even though he called from the Western canon as well as the Eastern canon to create the poetic revolution that he did, his work is very difficult to translate. I was lucky to win a National Endowment for the Arts Translation Fellowship in 2014 for translating him, but he needs more and more and more translators. And I've always believed that bringing poetry to the masses, it helps to make multimedia projects in order to gain a different set of audiences, audiences that are theater audiences mainly, or opera audiences, or performance audiences in general, to bring to their attention literary figures that they may not necessarily have access to because they may not want to seek translations of these people's works. So Ahmad Shamlou was not only the person who really helped bring Iranian poetics all the way to free verse, because when you think of Persian poetry, you're probably thinking of Rumi and Hafez and the formal modes of poetry. But in the beginning part of the 20th century, his predecessor, Nima, started breaking with the rhyming schemes and changing the modes, much to the chagrin of the society at large, because they wanted the poetics to stay as strong as it was in its formal sense. Then Shamlou continued that work and brought Iranian poetics all the way to free verse. So he's a massive, massive cultural figure, especially a figure in my own life, as I knew him personally.
If you'd like to learn more about Ahmad Shamlou, we have a link to his work at yourcallradio.org. And Niloufar Talebi will be performing Abraham in and Flames on Wednesday, May 31st at 8 o'clock. It'll be followed by a Q&A. Niloufar is a writer, theater artist, and award-winning translator. She's editor and translator of Belonging, New Poetry by Iranians Around the World. Today, we're also joined by Brian Copeland, an award-winning actor, comedian, and radio talk show host, and he'll be performing his one-man play, Not a Genuine Black Man, at the festival May 31st at 8:30, June 2nd at 7 o'clock, and June 4th at 5 o'clock. After the break, we'll talk with Brian more about his one-man show. And Andrew Wood is executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. Again, it kicks off this Thursday, and the performances will be at the Fort Mason Center here in San Francisco. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the San Francisco International Arts Festival. It's a call to action inspired by a question posed by German playwright and poet Bertolt Brecht in 1939. In dark times, will there also be singing? And his answer was, yes, there will be singing about the dark times. Starting on Thursday, artists from the Bay Area and 12 countries will come together for 2 weeks of dance, music, performance art, and theater to echo Brecht's affirmation that there will be singing about the dark times. You can find information about the festival at yourcallradio.org. Andrew Wood is executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. Niloufar Talebi is a writer, theater artist, and award-winning translator. And you can see her piece, Abraham in Flames, Wednesday, May 31st at 8 o'clock. And Brian Copeland is an award-winning actor and radio talk show host. And he brought back his one-man play, Not a Genuine Black Man, for this festival, Wednesday, May 31st at 8:30, Friday, June 2nd at 7 o'clock, and Sunday, June 4th at 5 o'clock. Brian, earlier in the show, you said that you put your one-man show to rest, but you realized that you had to bring it back. And how does it feel after Donald Trump's election to do this one-man show, which, again, is about your upbringing? You tell the story of your world through the eyes of an 8-year-old in San Leandro, one of the only African-Americans in that town, and you say the town didn't want your family there. What's the feeling this time around?
Well, as I said before, it's just the way that it's landing. It's just so different. It was always embraced, and people always there are different takeaways from this show, because there's domestic violence, so there's that issue. There's housing discrimination, which is a major, major part of it, because that's the reason that this city at the time was segregated. And I should mention, by the way, too, that today it's considered one of the most diverse cities in the country as of the 2010 census. So that's how things have changed. But it seems like people are just embracing it in a different way. As I said, I did it for a number of years, and then I went on. I've done 3 subsequent plays since then, and I thought that for the most part that I was done with this. But when I'm performing the show now, I'm finding a lot of people will say things, and they're nodding their heads. They're nodding there. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I understand that. Oh, well, I remember that. You know, those kinds of things. I'm giving voice, I think. That little boy, I think, is giving voice to a lot of feelings and a lot of experiences that people have not really had a chance to express. Or if they've had a chance to express them, it's not been to an audience that wants to hear it. And I think that's really what the biggest part is. And going back to something that Andrew said about multiculturalism and how when you look at the audiences, that's what it is that you see, and that's America. That's the reason that Donald Trump is president, because there is a segment of this country that fears multiculturalism. They are afraid that they're losing their place and that they're losing their position in the pecking order of America. And, you know, like it or not, the demographics in this country are changing. And unfortunately, there's something that a business owner in San Leandro told me about how racial attitudes there changed. And it's going to be the same thing with how racial attitudes in America are going to change. And that's coffin by coffin. You know, that's what he said, coffin by coffin, meaning that the people who hold those views are dying off. And if you look, for example, at the millennial generation, I'm the last year of the baby boom. Mm. So, you know, my children are millennials, and their experience in town, their experience in America, their experience in the world is much different than mine is, because millennials don't care about color. They don't care about sexual orientation. They don't care about nation of origin. People are people. They judge you for the most part, based upon who you are as an individual. And unfortunately, there are generations past that have difficulty because of the way that they're raised and because of their times, have difficulty understanding that shift and that change.
It's interesting to learn for people who live in this area that in 1971, the National Committee Against Discrimination in Housing called San Leandro a racist bastion of white supremacy. Newsweek magazine came to town. CBS aired a one-hour TV documentary. The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights conducted a hearing. And then your family moved
to
town.
Then we moved to town. I want to mention, by the way, that documentary is called The Suburban Wall, and it aired on CBS Westinghouse. Westinghouse used to own a number of CBS stations. Group W, I think, was called around the country. And it aired on Thanksgiving Day, 1971. And you can see that documentary. I have it on my website. Just go to briancopeland.com, and you can take a look at it. And it's pretty amazing because, you know, what's interesting is that if my story were taking place in, let's say, Mississippi or Alabama, people would go, and your point is what? But the fact is that this is Northern California. Mm. This is, you know, we moved in 5 years after the Summer of Love. This is, you know, 10 miles from UC Berkeley, 20 miles from San Francisco, and this is going on. And there were pockets that were like this all around America. There are still some, you know, that are, whereas housing discrimination is illegal, it still does happen, and there are still ways that people of color are kept out of particular areas. And once people of color move in to these areas, there's a white flight that takes place. And unfortunately, it's still happening, although it has not happened as frequently in circumstances, in situations as it did, you know, when I was a child and when I was coming up. But, you know, again, this, you talk about the art in the Trump presidency. This is the last gasp of the angry white man. That's what the Trump presidency is. It's the last gasp of the angry white man. And, you know, you have these folks in the Midwest who the factory closed down, and they have to have somebody to blame. It's somebody's fault. It's Obama's fault. It's the fault that Mexicans are coming here taking our jobs. It's somebody else's fault that the buggy whip factory closed down. So now you have a guy who comes in and says, I'm going to bring the buggy whip factory back to your town. Well, no, you're not, because people don't need buggy whips. Instead, you need to educate these people so they can get jobs in the fields where people are hiring. But no, the buggy whip factory closed down because the Mexicans stole your job, because of NAFTA, because foreigners, because those people. And that is the lie that we have to, in some way, dispel, that we have to educate people in terms of, as far as the truth is concerned. And you can do that easier through art, you know, than you can through sitting somebody down and going, listen, here are the facts, because they don't want to hear the facts.
Have you taken your play to any of these areas in the country?
Oh, yeah. The Genuine has been to, you know, over the years, you know, over 30 cities, 40 cities, I think, close to 1,000. I'm coming up on 1,000 performances of that show.
Wow.
So I've taken it to a lot of fair housing organizations have brought the show in, and we've done it as fundraisers around the country for fair housing organizations. But yeah, it does. Yeah, I've taken it to several of those communities, quite frankly.
Brian Copeland is an award-winning actor. You can see his one-man show, Not a Genuine Black Man, Wednesday, May 31st at 8:30, Friday, June 2nd at 7 o'clock, and Sunday, June 5th at 5 o'clock. And today we are talking about the San Francisco International Arts Festival, which kicks off on Thursday. It runs for 2 weeks at the Fort Mason Center here in San Francisco. And now I would like to welcome Nancy Wong to the show. Nancy is a playwright and founder, director of Ethnotech. And hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Nancy is the founder of Ethnotech, and she is going to be performing a staged reading called 10,000 Steps on Saturday, June 3rd at 2 o'clock. Nancy, this sounds fascinating. We've done a lot of shows recently about Chinese immigrants and the Expulsion Act. Can you tell us about this staged reading?
Sure. There's a town called Locke, California, Locke, which is in the Sacramento Delta area, that was founded by and built by the Chinese, who were the levee builders of the deltas. That, you know, because of their work, 88,000 acres were added to the farming arable land and agriculture for this state. And they came from all over, sometimes over the weekend. If they had one day off, they would go to Locke, where there were gambling casinos and whorehouses, and but you know, Chinese food restaurants, and you know, camaraderie, and people really got their hair cut there. I mean, it was a place that they felt welcome. So this play, 10,000 Steps, is about this one feisty woman, Chinese woman, who in the 1950s moved there because she got married. She was actually born in Isleton, which is another little town in that area that had a lot of Chinese, and made it her personal dedication and commitment to take care of all these aging Chinese workers who were stranded here because of the Exclusion Act. Hmm. Couldn't go back to China. Because they, if they did, to see their wives and their families, they probably couldn't get back in, even though they had been here forever. And so they couldn't bring them over either because of the Chinese Exclusion Act. So they were stranded without family, and family is very important to the Chinese. And particularly in your old age, when you know, you've given so much to your family, and now it's time for them to give back and take care of you in your old age. Well, they didn't have that. So this woman, Connie King, took care of them. She took them to the doctor. She to the dentist. She, when they were sick, she fed them chicken soup, and she wiped their butts, and she did everything she could to make their lives, you know, somewhat comfortable at the end of their lives. And she would bury them and pay for the funeral expenses. She was an artist. She was an amazing painter. But she lived with two husbands that were very mean to her. One of them actually took a hammer and broke all her toes.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, women in the old days, Confucian times, they were like at the bottom practically of the hierarchy.
Wow. Nancy, Ethnotech has been around for a long time. I remember seeing a performance when I first moved to San Francisco.
Wow.
From the North Bay. What are your thoughts about the times that we're in right now? We've been talking about the theme of the International Arts Festival, which is a call to action inspired by a question posed by Bertolt Brecht in 1939. In dark times, will there also be singing? And he said, yes, there will be singing about the dark times. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, The arts monies has dried up for a lot of organizations, but we continue to do the important work. We have Red Altar, which is the story of immigration and how my ancestors came in 1850 and they started the fishing industry in Monterey. Now, you would never know that if you go down there, because after, I think it was in 1906, when the earthquake came, they burnt down their village. They had slowly been passing laws to get rid of the Chinese. And so that's not much different than today. Mm-hmm. You know, that piece goes through three generations and how they worked and they worked and they had courage and persistence and they succeeded. And at the very end of this play, we could connect it to what's happening with Black Lives Matter. So, yeah, it's still going on. Sanctuary City is so important. There has to be a place where we honor people who have helped build this country and continue to do so, like the Latinos who come from Mexico, from anywhere, South America, Central America, to build this country, feed us our food. So, are you there?
Yes.
Can we hear?
Go ahead.
So,
you're still there.
So it's really time for artists to tackle the difficult issues. You know, it's not, I mean, art for art's sake and frivolity and joy and happiness and silliness has its place, but wow, right now, we really need to do the hard work. We as artists have the ability to tackle the hard subjects in an artistic way that it inspires and educates but does not necessarily alienate people so that they hear the message.
What about that, Andrew? The role of the artist in these times?
I think it's the role of each individual artist to do what they think is important for them. I mean, not every artist should be a political artist, just like not every artist should do children's theater or things like that. I think as an artist, there's something inside you that tells you what to do, and you must follow that. And I obviously we're working with a lot of people that are into political art, but we've also got family programming as well. But you have to be good at doing that in order to want to do it. I mean, the worst thing in the world is to put an artist who doesn't like children in to do a children's show, because it's just not a right fit. So I think as the, you know, my job as the festival director or organizer is to provide a context over this whole thing, and if it's for each individual artist to find their place, because there's places for all different types of artists within the festival, and like I say, you can't force artists to do things that is not something that's true.
I would say just finding the things that you want to say, finding your voice as an artist over all the obstacles that you face in your lifetime as an artist is in itself a political act. If you want to broaden the notion of politics and civic participation, I wanted to say, speaking to Brian's earlier point about how there's a segment of America that thinks that blames the other, the people of color, for the misfortunes that they're facing. They're extremely misguided, because you know the misfortunes that they're experiencing are really imposed upon them by the big banks and the big money and the corporate corruption.
And they vote against their own interests.
Vote against their own interests. They're brainwashed to think, of course, you know, we are the pawns. We are the pawns to distract them from what really matters and what they really should be voting against. The Iranian American travel ban. I mean, what was that? That lasted 2 months? I don't even know if it's still going on or not. I know that as a person who is an American citizen, I have not traveled internationally since the travel ban. I know that people's weddings were ruined.
Well, it never really went into effect. I mean, it was...
Who wants to experience that at the border?
Well, of course.
Do you really want to experience that at the border?
No,
do I want to
not.
Be held for 3 hours in a room and have my cell phone and my laptop confiscated and copied, and I don't know what's going to happen to the data that's on it, you know?
And that has happened. So it has happened. And I want to add that, you know, we do children's programming a great deal. We do a lot of schools and libraries, and we're probably known more for our children's program. But even our children's programming, our folktales and our mythology has a message. That's the power of folktales. Mm-hmm. That's why they've lasted thousands of years. So it's not either or. You know, you do children's programming, but this is like an age in which they're so open. And I think really it behooves artists to make the art meaningful.
Well, I'll tell you something. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So that's, just to say, Andrew, that I know that people are called to different things, but even as artists called to different things, there needs to be some reason why we're doing that art. How do we want to leave our audiences? What do we want them to think about? How deep do we want them to go? Even as a 7 or 8 year old, they understand when we do an old folktale that has to do with, it's called Trouble Talk, and it's about how man started Trouble Talk with all the other animals, and in the end his highest power was fire, and he almost destroyed the earth, and how, you know, we have to understand what real power is. Is it bragging? Is it boasting that I'm stronger than you are? No. So I think even children's programming needs to have some kind of point.
Saraswati.
Well, one of the things that she said earlier was that the point is to inspire and educate, but I think there's a third component there, and that's entertain. Because
yes,
if you don't entertain, I mean that the entertainment in my case, I intersperse it with laughter. That's the spoonful of sugar. Otherwise, it's a rant, and otherwise it's just a rant. And the third thing, in terms of what artists bring to the table and how artists create work. When I wrote my first play, the idea where I came from was I got the idea from Carl Reiner, who was one of my idols, and he said to me that what you have to do is find the piece of ground that you alone stand on, that nobody else does, because we all have our own individual piece of ground, and the trick is figuring out what your piece of ground is. And he said, and right from there. And he said his piece of ground was, he found his in 1960 or 1959 when he had just left Sid Caesar's show after a number of years, and he goes, what's my piece of ground? Okay, I'm a married comedy writer. I live in New Rochelle with my wife and kids, and I write for a comedy show in New York, and that became the Dick Van Dyke Show. Hmm. So it's all about, where it is. I can't write from your perspective. You can't write from mine. I can't write from Andrew's or anybody else's. I can only tell stories from my point of view. And that's what we all bring to the table, no matter what the genre is, whether it's children's theater, whether it's political, no matter what the genre is, you can only tell a story from your point of view.
Hmm. We have an email for you, Brian, from Michael, who says, I'm currently having a disciplined writing day. I was making a cup of coffee. I turned on KALW and was lucky enough to hear Brian Copeland talk about the political climate today. I have never heard the situation put so clearly and succinctly. It was just brilliant. Thank you, Mr. Copeland. I'm going to post that right now and give you credit.
Well, you're a very good-looking man. No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. And, just again, the problem that we have is that there is, this idea that we're living in this post-fact era. We're living in this era where the truth doesn't matter. And where if my source of information tells me that 2 + 2 = 5, you can show me it's 4 all you want, but you're all lying unless I hear it from this source or a source that is endorsed by this main source. And that's that's the big problem. That's the problem. Roger Ailes passed away, and he's getting accolades in some places, being vilified in other places. And it's like, that man did more to harm the discourse in this country, than probably anybody in the last 50 years. Seriously. More to pit us against each other and to make it us versus them. I mean, it's sad what has happened in this country. Mm-hmm. And it is the role of the artist, again, through entertainment, that's how we get in through the back door, to try to bring some truth.
We have about a couple minutes left. And to that point, so many people have been asking themselves, what is most effective? What can I do? What is my role in the next 4 years? I'm sure you've all been thinking about this.
It's not going to be 4 years.
Well,
for the next 18 months.
Go down the line.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know what I mean.
I know.
So what are your thoughts?
Engagement. Engaging with engaging with the arts, volunteering, making the arts, supporting the arts, attending the arts, mm-hmm. if that's your thing. If not, you're doing political activism, you're putting people together to have conversations, you're going into the schools, you're taking people on field trips to see art shows and museums and Brian's shows and to the festival and all these shows that we have that Andrew has curated for the festival. It's a kind of engagement and a kind of conversation that should be happening. It's civic conversation, it's civic discourse that I don't see happening, because of course we have all kinds of distractions in this country. We have 400 cable channels and all kinds of pop stars and the Kardashians to distract people, the young people, away from what's really important. And that is actually the reason why people are getting brainwashed, is because they're buying into that thing. I think it's a privilege to live in a late capitalist country as a smart person, because you have everything at your disposal. We have all kinds of information. We have all kinds of opportunities in this country. But our jobs as good citizens and as artists and as just anybody who's living is to bypass all the junk and all the static that is put before us and really get to use the resources that we have and the information access that we have in this country to make better citizens of ourselves and a better country and a better culture.
Andrew?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's very important for communities to develop now. I mean, we've been isolated, individualized, and I think community is very important, where you share ideas, you get encouragement from each other. And attending an arts event is very much creating community. I mean, after our 10,000 Steps pieces, we're having a panel where people can engage with the issue of the Alien Act and the Exclusion Act and how it's not that much different today if we're not careful.
Mm. Right. Andrew, final thoughts?
Final thoughts. So, well, what we're doing is we've created an environment where people can immerse themselves in the arts. You can see 3 or 4 shows in a day over the course of a weekend. There's a range of work going from the highly political to family programming to art for art's sake in the middle somewhere. But there is also this panel, which starts on the morning of Saturday, June the 3rd, and it's titled "In the Dark Times, Will There Also Be Singing?" They'll be singing about the dark times, and that's being led by the Center for Political Education. It's free to the public. We'd like the public to come, or our arts audiences to come, and learn to be arts activists.
Oh, and if I can mention, too, Jesse, you talked about what the role was, and what our role is in the next 4 years is to refuse to be silent.
Hear, hear. Brian Copeland, you can see his one-man show, Not a Genuine Black Man, May 31st at 8:30, Friday, June 2nd at 7 o'clock, and Sunday, June 4th at 5 o'clock. You can also see Niloufar Taleb's performing a dramatic reading of a libretto. It's an opera inspired by the life and writing of the Iranian poet Ahmad Shamlou. That'll be on Wednesday, May 31st at 8 o'clock. And you can see Nancy Wang's 10,000 Steps Saturday, June 3rd at 2 o'clock. Andrew Wood is executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. It kicks off Thursday, and performances take place for 2 weeks at Fort Mason in San Francisco. Andrew, Brian, Niloufar, and Nancy, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Having
thank
us.
You.
Thank you so much for joining us. And coming up tomorrow, we are going to talk about how congressional Republicans and the White House used an obscure law to repeal regulations passed in the final months of the Obama administration. Donald Trump and Republicans used the Congressional Review Act to repeal 14 regulations ranging from protecting streams from coal mining waste to ensuring women's access to family planning services. I hope you can join us for that important show. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.